Okay, Matthew chapter 5. I think Ken did a good job in his opening there. We were late, but I was there. No, I was unfashionably late. Yeah. I looked fashionable, but I was unfashionably late. Yeah. But we snuck in. I heard the end of it. It was good. But the good connections as far as the whole thing with vows. Remember, we were looking last week at verse 33 where it says, you've heard that the ancients were told you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. And so we kind of went through and saw that although they would make that presented an opportunity of, you know, when you've made a vow, then you keep it. But if you haven't made a vow, well, you're not bound by that. And so kind of discussing how what Jesus was trying to get us to understand was you are to be so honorable, I think was the word that Tom Tuck was using, to be so honorable that your yes is yes, your no is no, and people can depend on you. You know, and so good connection there, Ken, with the, in a sense, the vows that we do make. You know, when we're saying, I love the Lord my God with all my heart, my soul, and my mind, that, yeah, that is, in a sense, it's a commitment. And by our honor, we ought to be able to do that. Well, let's go down a little bit more. Let's pick it up in verse 38. And I actually have high hopes of finishing Matthew 5 today. Hopefully they're not loftily high, unreasonably high. Rick. I think my high hopes are getting dashed here. No.
Good. Well, just a quick point before you move on. You might mention this last week, but the bottom line is we are a reflection of the character of God. And his character is he always says what he means without deviation, whether that's positive or negative. He always keeps his word. And we're, as his children, we're supposed to reflect his character.
Right. Right. Actually, on that specifically dealing with vows, go to Hebrews chapter 6. What? Oh, yeah, keep a finger in Matthew. Hey, as long as you have 66 fingers, you're good. Hebrews chapter 6, going along with what Rick was saying there about the character of God. Verse 18. Let's pick it up in 17. Back it up. Let's get 16. Verse 16. For men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath given as confirmation is an end of every dispute. In the same way, God desiring to show even more, to show to the heirs of the promise the unchangeableness of his purpose, interposed with an oath, in order that by two unchangeable things, this is what I wanted to get, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we may have strong encouragement, we who have fled for refuge and laid and hold of the hope set before us, in which it is impossible for God to lie. When Rick was talking about God's character with vows and how the whole thing is, let your yes be yes and your no be no, with God, it's impossible for him to lie. That is his character. And Rick is right. Matthew 5 really is, and that's what we're going to, if we get through everything I want to get through today, what we're going to tie up at the end is, that's what it's all about. Is the character of God and us taking on the character of God. Go back to Matthew chapter 5 then. Don't want to disappoint Stan for that finger he's holding there. You're welcome. Matthew chapter 5. Didn't want your finger to get very tired either there. Verse 38. He says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist him who is evil, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also, and if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also, and whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. Okay. Just thinking about if I had any money before I got onto the him who wants to borrow from you. Verse 38, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Okay. let's go back and get that. There are several places we could get it, but I think the one I want to take it from is in Leviticus chapter 24. And I don't want to disappoint Stan. Stick your finger there. Because I just remembered I want to hit something before that. Go back to Genesis 9. But we will go to Leviticus 24 after that. Genesis 9. In Genesis chapter 9, right after the flood, Noah has offered up his sacrifices, and God has blessed him, tells him to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. And then you get down, verse 3 is where he tells him, he gives him every living thing for food, just as he gave the green plant. But then verse 9:4, says, only you shall not eat the flesh with its life, that is, its blood. And I will surely require your life blood. From every beast I will require it, and from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man. Here you have the beginning of this introduction. We're going to get to an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but God, in a sense, introduces this with the idea of blood for blood. You know, if somebody kills someone else, he says, whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. So here, right after the flood, you have God setting up. I just totally blanked it. Thank you, capital punishment. I was going to death row, the little lethal injections. What's that stuff called? Capital punishment. You have God setting it up that whoever would kill someone else, then same thing is to be done to him. By man, his blood shall be shed. Now, when you get to the giving of the law over in Leviticus 24, is an explanation of that section. And you can find it. It comes in Exodus, it comes in Leviticus, it comes in Deuteronomy, all of them. But Leviticus is the major section. Leviticus 24 is where you have that restated, but then a little bit more added, a little bit more of an explanation. Leviticus 24:17. We're going to start from verse 17. It says, if a man takes the life of any human being, he shall surely be put to death. Okay, which is just a restatement of Genesis 9. And the one who takes the life of an animal shall make it good, life for life. So I guess you don't have to be put to death. You don't get the death penalty for killing an animal. And if a man injures his neighbor, just as he has done, so it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, just as he has injured a man, so it shall be inflicted on him. The one who kills an animal shall make it good, but the one who kills a man shall be put to death. It shall be one standard for you, it shall be for the stranger as well as the native, for I am the Lord your God. Okay, now, here's where God says, okay, originally it was life for life. If somebody kills somebody, all right, then he's to be put to death. But here he kind of explains a little bit more and sets up a system of justice. That, you know, okay, for an animal, you got to make it good. You got to pay back another animal. You got to replace that animal. But he says, if someone injures his neighbor, then whatever he's done, it's supposed to come back to him. You know, so if there's an eye, well, then, you know, if I happen to put out Tom's eye over there, then my eye is to get poked out. If I knock out his tooth, I get one knocked out. Actually, if I started messing with Tom, I'd probably get a whole bunch of them knocked out. But he's a little bit bigger than me. But it says, just as he has injured a man, so it shall be inflicted on him. That's justice. Now, that's not really what most people are not really interested in justice. They don't like a justice system. Well,
now, the indication is that this is not intentional. This is even accidental. It doesn't make a difference between accidental and intentional.
Okay, you do have, let me think about this. You do have, like, when you're talking about the life for life, if you had an accidental death, there was, you did have, like, your cities of refuge that the people would flee to, and then they would not be put to death. So I would, you know, given that this begins with, if the man takes the life of any human being, he shall surely be put to death, and then heads into this eye for eye, tooth for tooth, I'm not sure that it necessarily would be an accidental kind of thing. It seems like there's a distinction there, at least with the life there is.
Yeah, there's further explanation of this section somewhere else within the delineation of the law that regards intention. When someone accidentally kills someone.
Right. That's what we're talking about. Right, that's what we're talking about with this, the cities of refuge. That was the whole, if somebody intentionally murdered someone, if it was something, even if they did it in anger, but not, maybe they weren't intending to kill them, but they were angry with them at the time, it's still a premeditated kind of thing. That one would still count. But if there was an accident, kind of, you know, somebody's out there chopping wood and the axe head comes off and hits the guy in the head and kills him, then in that sense, they had the blood avenger, which pretty much was the other family's going to come out. You know, it's the blood feuds, you know, the Hatfields and McCoys. I was getting the McCoys. I couldn't remember who they were feuding with. The Hatfields and McCoys is that kind of a thing where you killed my brother. I'm going to come kill you now. And so that was the justice system. Right. But if it were an accidental kind of thing, where there was nothing prior to that that would show that there could have been an intention in it, then in that case the person was to still run for his life because, generally speaking, mob violence doesn't, you know, they're not going to take the time to get to the justice of it and figure out if it was intentional. They're just going to be angry that their relative is dead and they're going to come kill you. So the guy was to flee to one of these cities of refuge. God set up six cities of refuge. Three on the east side of the Jordan, three on the west side of the Jordan. And then they would flee to that city of refuge. When they got to the city of refuge then they would, I believe it was the elders of the city, would then judge the case to decide whether it was intentional or not. If the elders decided that it was intentional, then he was put to death. If, you know, they handed him over to the blood avenger. If they decided it was unintentional, then he was to remain in that city until the death of the high priest. When the high priest died, then he could be free to go back to his own home. But if he ever left that city before the death of the high priest, he's fair game. And the blood avenger could kill him if he wanted to. So you did have, that was the justice system set up. I guess it's what the difference between, What would it be? First degree murder and, I don't know,
manslaughter.
You know, so I guess manslaughter, you get imprisoned in the city of refuge. First degree murder, you get put to death. Yeah. Now, that's the way the system was set up. So I think in this case where he's talking about life for life and his making that connection, it seems like it's an intentional kind of thing. That this is the person intentionally. You can get, let me see if I can find the Deuteronomy place. Deuteronomy, is it going to be 27 maybe? Because I think that's where it talks. It's on this side of the page. Hold on, give me just a second here. Deuteronomy 19 is where he does make a little bit more clarification on things. Is that right?
11.
Now that's. Oh, no, 1921 is where you, yeah, you've got all that, but then you've got the 21 is where you have the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. Nope, it's going to be the Exodus. See, I only intended on going to Leviticus, so I forgot I didn't jot down these other ones. Exodus 21. Sorry. Exodus 21. I could tell you where it was out on the page. I just couldn't remember what book it was in at the time. Exodus 21. And it talks about the whole, I guess, the whole context of this. 21:12, he starts going through things and talks about somebody hits a man so that he dies, he'll be put to death, but if he did not lie in wait for him, that's where you start getting all the cities of refuge type stuff. But verse 18, if men have a quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, he does not die. Excuse me. Does not die, but remains in bed, gets up. You know, kind of, he's laying out all the details of how this is to be applied. The you get to 23, you know, and you could just side note warning, verse 22. You might, if you ever get into discussions with people who claim to be Christians who also claim to believe that abortion is okay, watch out for 21:22, because that's where the man strikes a woman, she has a miscarriage, then they're fined as opposed to being put to death. So you'll find some who would argue for abortion would try to say, see, it's less than a human. Just warning, side note, pay attention. Don't make sure you know all the other verses that would indicate clearly that it is a human, or he is, she is, baby is, however you want to go that way. Okay, that was a freebie, free side note, tangent if you prefer. Verse 23 says, but if there is any further injury, then you shall appoint as a penalty life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. So whatever is inflicted, and in this case it is specifically people who are quarreling. I mean, there is a problem there. It's not just, oops, I accidentally, you know, tripped you and you bruised your knee, so now somebody's going to come over and give me a kick in the knee to bruise mine, or, you know, trip you and put them down. You know, and then there's the distinctions with the slave. You do anything to a slave, you got to let him go free. So the point is, the justice system, the Old Testament justice system, was an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Whatever you did to somebody else in anger, in a quarrel, in those kind of situations, then that's what's supposed to happen to you. You get back the same thing. You know, as my dad used to put it, if you can't dish it out, don't take it. But if you can't take it, don't dish it out. Probably better go that way with it. If you can't take it, don't dish it out. You know, that kind of thing. Whatever you dish out is going to come back to you. Whatever you inflict on someone else is what's going to be inflicted on you. Now, that would solve a lot of barroom brawls. Okay, maybe you'd have to solve the alcohol before you could solve the barroom brawl. But, you know, you can imagine a lot of the arguments and fights that go on if whatever injury was inflicted. You can imagine that would probably solve some of the domestic abuse type cases, you know. The husband beats up the wife. The police then beat up the husband. You know, it balances out. That was the Old Testament justice system. Now, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is working not towards a justice system, but he's talking specifically to his people. He's not talking about what should the laws of the land be. You know, I think you can make a good case that even the founding fathers, when they're setting things up, this is the kind of thing that they were looking at to set the laws of the land. You know, so when they talk about a punishment that's equal to, you know, that's not, shouldn't be in excess of the crime, that's the whole idea, is you want an equivalent punishment committed. An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for hand, burn for burn, wound for wound, all, you know, that you want it to be, the punishment to be commensurate with the crime. And that's, I think that's what they were setting up with the justice system. But if you go over to Matthew chapter 5, Jesus' main concern wasn't about how we need to run our nation right now. He was more concerned about how we need to run our personal lives. And so he says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist him who is of evil. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. Now that's not the avenger of blood kind of thing to do. That's a mercy kind of thing. You know, whoever, you know, so somebody slaps you on your right cheek, turn them the other. I've heard a story. I don't know if it's true. I've never actually asked him if it's true, but I believe that Matt Wilson actually had that take place. That somebody at some point in time got angry with him, and there were some of his students around at the time, and this person, you know, hauled off and hit him. And Matt just kind of stood up and gave him the other one. That's the story I've heard. Now, whether or not it's true, it still makes a really good story. But, you know, maybe somebody who was there could tell me whether it was true or not. Maybe he could. I've never asked him. But it's just one of those stories that I heard long ago. but that's, you know, there's a definitely a time for that. And that's what he's saying, you know. In the case, and remember, the situation from Exodus was you're having a quarrel with somebody. Somebody's trying to quarrel with you. You get in a fight, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. I mean, whatever damage is done, you need to come back to them. He's saying, okay, those who are of evil, trying to quarrel with you or whatever, he says, don't resist them. If they're going to slap you on the cheek, give them the other one. Tom.
You know, the context that it's looking at here is really physical, but there's a spiritual aspect to this too. You know, it's not just if somebody physically hurts you, you turn the other cheek, but somebody hurts your feelings or somebody, you know, your pride is hurt or whatever it might be. You still need to have the attitude of turning the other cheek and having the right attitude.
Right, right. And that's what you're going to see with Jesus later on. He's hanging on the cross. He says, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. You know, that is, of course, in that case, it was still some physical stuff that's going on that he was wanting forgiven. But, yeah, very true. You know, he goes on and says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Now, that doesn't go, you know, in a sense, someone wants to sue you, take your shirt. I mean, generally speaking, we're going to go, hey, this is mine. This is my personal property. Stay back. But if you think about 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 is where they had a similar case where within the church there in Corinth, brother was taking brother against or to court. And Paul's response to him is, why not rather be wronged? Why not rather be wronged? See, there is a time for that. And it is, you know, like Tom's saying, it's not just in the physical realm, turn the other cheek in the physical realm. It's going to be with hurt feelings. It's going to be with somebody who's maybe slandering you. Gee, that would never happen, would it? Then there is a time where you let it go. Let it go. Here, you've got he wants to sue you. Take your shirt. Now, again, keep in mind here, too. Just like we were saying, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You know, there was not, you know, Jesus is not here personally working on the judgment system of a nation or the justice system of a nation or the injustice system of a nation. But he's working on personally where people need to be. I think you're going to find the same thing in business. That doesn't mean that you let every bad guy who comes along take advantage of you. You'll never stay in business. That's not what he's talking is on the personal level, your personal relationships. Okay, now, whoever shall force you, I'll get back to you, Bob. Whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. You know, the Roman soldiers had the law that if they could ask any of the servants or any of the people of the lands that they had conquered, you know, they see they're going along and they say, "Hey, I need you to carry my pack." Well, then they carry it to the next mile marker. And that was just, you know, you're a part of being a conquered nation was that was the what your lot was. Jesus says, you know, instead of trying to argue that one and try to say, no, you know, I'm a Jew and, you know, we're not supposed to let anyone rule over us. He says, instead of doing that, he says, go with them 2 miles. Instead of just doing exactly what you had to do, go with them too. Maybe it is an unjust situation. Maybe, you know, the conquering nation, perhaps it wasn't right. Maybe you look at it and say, this is a big, strong guy and I'm kind of weak. And here I've got to carry his pack. Okay. Whatever the situation, he still says, you know, he forces you to go 1 mile. You go with him the second, which is where you get that saying, going the second mile. And then we'll get to verse 42. Bob, did you want to still say something on this?
Most people need to realize the system back then is not the system we live in today. There were no jails. You paid the due that was due when it was due. When someone sued someone, they cannot sue because I spilled coffee on myself and you gave it to me and it was hot. I can't sue you because I don't like the color of your hair. The system we have today allows virtually anybody to sue anybody for any reason. Back there, if you went to the judges, you had to have a cause that was definable under law before you could actually sue someone. So if someone was suing someone for their coat, it was, you already did me damage, therefore I'm asking to be made whole. It was not, you've got something I want, therefore I'm taking you to court to get it. So we need to understand that when it says not to let, if someone wants to sue you for your cloak, your tunic, give them the cloak too, that doesn't mean if you're in business, someone walks in and takes all your goods off your shelves, you're to stand there and let them walk out the door because they want it. Or if someone wants to borrow things from you and never return them, that's not what this is saying. So I think we need to keep it in perspective of it's an attitude, not a reality of exactly the life system that we live in today.
Okay, let's go over for a moment. Go over to Luke chapter 6. Okay, let's get verse 42 and then we'll go to Luke 6. Verse 42 says, "Give to him who asks of you." Bob referred to it, so we'll go ahead and cover it. "Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you." Okay, go over to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6 is, Jesus says a lot of the same kind of things as he is in Matthew 5. And this is gonna fit in also with the last section of Matthew 5. So, but we'll preempt it just a little bit. Let's pick it up in verse 27, Luke 6, 27. "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. Whoever hits you on the cheek, offer him the other also. And whoever takes away your coat, do not withhold your shirt from him either. Give to everyone who asks of you, and whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. And just as you want people to treat you, treat them in the same way. And if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great. You'll be sons of the Most High. For he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men." Notice there, like in verse 29, when he says, "Whoever hits you on the cheek, offer him the other also. Whoever takes away your coat, do not withhold your shirt from him either." Now, in that case, he's not even specifically talking about whether or not they're suing you. It's just generally, how are you to be toward other people? And we're talking in the personal realm. I will not deny these are challenging things, and you've got to stick all the principles of Scripture together. You can't just grab one verse, go here it is, this is what we got to do. But the principles, you know, with the new covenant, that's what we're talking about, is he's not setting up a set of rules and laws and this is exactly what you have to do. What he's setting up is the principle. And the principle is, from Matthew 5, you know, the justice or the way that people dealt with one another was an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You know, whatever you give to me, I'm going to give it back to you. You know, do unto others before they do unto you? Is that how that goes? See, that was the rule, what Jesus was dealing with, was that attitude. What he says for us is, be willing, you know, as Paul put it in 1 Corinthians 6, why not rather be wronged? Now, does that mean that you don't defend property rights, that you don't, I mean, if the law is on your side? No. But what it does mean is that your attitude and the basic principle by which you are to operate your life is, don't always be looking to give everything back to everybody that they've given to you. Because if you spend your life doing that, you're going to have a life full of bitterness. You're not going to be able to have your focus where it needs to be. I do want to tie this up, and I do want to get down. So just let me press on. I'm going to press on. Verse 43 says, you've heard that it was said, sorry, back in Matthew chapter 5. But we will flip back to Luke 6 in a little bit. So Stan, if you still want to keep your finger there, you may. Okay, verse 43, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, in order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax gatherers do the same? And if you greet your brothers only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Okay. You shall love your neighbor. You've heard that it was said you shall love your neighbor. Actually, let's go back to that one real quick. It's in Deuteronomy, I believe. Yeah. Is that right? Hold on. No, sorry, Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19, and we're going to start from verse 17. He says, you shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You may surely reprove your neighbor, but you shall not incur sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Okay, this is where the whole you shall love your neighbor as yourself comes from. And in this particular context, he is speaking about their own countrymen, their fellow Jews. How are they to behave toward them? And so he says, you know, don't take vengeance against them, don't bear grudges, and ultimately says you're to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, in Matthew 5, verse 43, it says, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, or you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Notice that it doesn't say hate your enemy there. It does say love your neighbor. And you can find places where there were certain tribes, there were certain nations that God said, okay, don't, you know, they didn't give you any harbor, or they didn't help you out at all whenever you were coming out of Egypt. So for them, yes, no mercy on them. But it doesn't specifically say hate your enemies. It says love your neighbor as yourself in the context to Jews, talking about Jews. So love your fellow Jew. Now, the people then made the extension of hate your enemies. Wasn't necessarily what God had said, but that's the extension that they made of it. Love your neighbor, hate your enemy. Now, go over to Luke chapter 10. This is actually one of the things that I find very interesting. That's the only place I can find in the Old Testament where it specifically says love your neighbor. It might say it some other places, but that was what I could find on a quick look. It's actually quoted many times in the New Testament. And Jesus quotes it, but the people that he's talking with, when he's talking with the rich young ruler, and he's listing off the laws, you know, and the rich young ruler says, well, you know, Jesus tells him to keep the laws, and he says, well, what laws are you talking about? So he says, you know, don't murder, don't commit adultery, and he's naming off the Ten Commandments, and then he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus added that into that list. Well, then, you also have at times some scribes that came to him, challenging him on things. And Jesus asked him, he said, okay, well, somebody asked him, you know, what's the greatest commandment? Verse 25, Luke 10:25, this is actually the one I was talking about. A certain lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, what is written in the law? How does it read to you? And he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus' answer to him is, you've answered correctly, do this and you'll live. Okay, so by that point in time, it seems the Jews had figured out this love your neighbor as yourself thing, but they understood it in the context of love your fellow Jew. You can hate everybody else, but love your fellow Jew. And so, as you continue here in Luke 10, it says, but wishing to justify, verse 29, but wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Well, if Jesus were going to go and do a nice exegetical study here and take it back to, you know, Leviticus 19 and look at it, he would come up with the answer, your neighbor is your fellow countryman. But he doesn't go that direction. Instead, he goes through and tells the story of the Good Samaritan. And the one who actually helped this Samaritan, you know, and the Samaritans were like dogs to the Jews. So the one who helped this Jew who was in trouble was the Samaritan. You know, and that's if you look at that story from a Jewish perspective, it probably was pretty humorous. I mean, Jesus kind of set him up, you know, because he got the Jew gets hurt, he gets injured, and you see the priest coming by, and oh, the priest is going to come help him, and the priest passes by on the other side because he didn't want to be unclean. Oh, okay, so he doesn't want to be unclean, but he still should have helped the guy, you know. And then the Levite comes by, and the same kind of thing. Well, you know, he should have helped him, and then the Samaritan comes by, you know, and they're kind of going, oh, Samaritans. You know, and he says, this is the guy who stops and helps. I mean, Jesus kind of set him up. So the Samaritan helps, and when it's all done, he asks the question, who was the neighbor to this guy? And Jesus expands that whole concept of what love your neighbor means. Is it no longer means your next door neighbor. It no longer means your fellow countrymen. It means everyone. You know, Jesus' answer to the guy was, go and do the same. You know, it's interesting, too, that the guy couldn't even say, oh, it was the Samaritan. When Jesus said, so who was the one who was a neighbor to him? He said, the one who helped him. And he says, okay, you go and do the same. Whoever needs help, that's your neighbor. Everybody is your neighbor. So in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says, verse 43, he says, you've heard that it was said, love your neighbor, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. He says, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. See, if they're talking love your neighbor, that's your fellow Jew, and hate your enemy, that's everybody else. Jesus is going, no. Love your enemy, pray for those who persecute you even, so you can be sons of your Father who is in heaven. Okay, now that's going to go back to what Rick was talking about God's character, that would prove themselves to be His sons. For He causes His Son to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And then He talks about if you only love those who love you, How's that different than anybody else? The tax gatherers love those who love them. If you only greet those who greet you, you know, how are you more than anybody else? Even the Gentiles, everybody does that. He's saying, hey, you've got to be better. Now, finger at Matthew 5, flip over to Luke 6. To tie this up here. Luke 6:35. He says, but love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. You know, I had to actually personally face this in Ghana, because a lot of times, you know, if you're white and you're in Ghana, then everybody automatically assumes that you're rich. And by comparison, you probably are. And so what do people do when they know someone who's rich? They're looking for a loan. So I probably had more loan requests than anybody in the room. Now, there are some people who, if they get in the room, I can't say that. But I feel fairly confident with this room. And I don't doubt that many of you have been asked for loans in your life. But I know that I've probably been asked for more. Now, you know, it says, love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. You know, it took me a little while to realize this. But in Ghana, anytime I would lend money, I never really expected to get it paid back. As far as relationship wise, I mean, you know the saying, if you got a friend, got somebody, you don't really like them, loan them money. You won't see them again. They'll stay away. You know? So I had to specifically, you know, and if they do happen to show up once or twice, just make sure you ask about this money that they owe you, and they won't show up anymore. Well, that's what, in Ghana, I just had to get to the point where I lend expecting nothing in return. And I had really did have to view it many times as a gift. And if I got it back, great. It allowed me to loan to somebody else. But really, that's what he says. Lend expecting nothing in return. But here's what makes it interesting. And your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Have you ever had a situation? Okay, let me rephrase that. How many situations have you had where you have done something kind to someone else and they're ungrateful? Ever happen? He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. See, if you look at what, you know, when it's in Matthew 5, it says He sends the sun on the righteous and on the evil and the good. He sends His rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. You know, you have people out there who are shaking their fist at God. We were on our way here today and saw a man with his son out playing ball in the yard. And Jennifer just looked over at me and said, doesn't his conscience bother him that on a Lord's Day morning he's just out there playing ball with his kid? Probably not. I don't know. See, at times maybe if we were God, we'd say, okay, that guy's trying to grow a garden out back. I ain't going to send no rain there. See, that's if you consider that all have sinned, fallen short of the glory of God, all have raised their fist against God, evil men. God has every right to torch the whole place. But instead, He continues to send sun and rain on evil and good. You know, it's not just the good farmer that gets the sun. It's not just the good farmer that gets the right amount of rain and doesn't get the flood. It goes for everybody. God is kind to ungrateful and evil men. And so we are supposed to be sons of our Father. And one of those things of lending and expecting nothing in return is that helps to make you like God. Because look at all that He has given And look how little he gets in return. You know, I've had people who kind of talk about how God must really be, he must really be whacked because he set up this whole system and you've got this, the majority of people are going to end up going to hell. And, you know, and so he must really be messed up. And I kind of look at it the other way around and go, wow, what a kind and merciful God. He creates all these people and he's got so many of them who are ungrateful that he's willing to stick it out for just the few who will be grateful. It's a pretty amazing God. Now, that what's even more amazing is in Matthew chapter 5, people get to verse 48 and they really have a problem. Therefore, you're to be perfect because your heavenly Father is perfect. Oh, no, 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 that's terrible. We can't do that. That's impossible. Well, why haven't you taken issue with the rest of Matthew chapter 5? I mean, you don't even need to get to verse 48 to have problems. There's a whole bunch of other stuff to have problems with. You know, it's kind of like when we got to the whole thing about an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, and, you know, turning the other cheek and someone wants to sue you. And the thought is, well, hey, we can't do that. You know, what about this situation? What about that situation? It kind of falls down to that whole divorce thing, too, where you've got to sort that one out on your own. But the principle doesn't change. The principle is there. Now, I want you to imagine this. Imagine if you had a man. Pick whatever man you desire. A man who does not have outbursts of anger. A man who has control over his spirit so that he's not flying off the handle. But if he gets angry, it's chosen and it's for a purpose and then it's done. And it's not an uncontrolled anger. If you have a man who is so pure that he doesn't even have lustful thoughts. If you have a man who has a marriage relationship that is excellent, so that the idea of divorce never even enters in. If you have a man who is so honorable that whatever he says, he does. And you can be confident that his yes is yes and his no is no. That if you have a man who is so patient and so merciful that he doesn't retaliate when people are doing evil against him. If you have a man who loves his enemies, does good to his enemies, prays for his enemies, greets his enemies, those who hate him, wouldn't that be the perfect man? Doesn't that sound like a pretty good description of Jesus? Other than the married and excellent marriage thing, but doesn't that sound like a pretty good description of Jesus? And isn't that who we have dwelling in us? Through the Holy Spirit. So when he says, therefore you're to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect, he's already laid out what that means. That is his expectation. And it is attainable with his help. And so all these things that we're looking at really is Jesus saying, hey, you're to have the character of your Father. That's what God's looking for. And that should be a description of the church. Matthew 5 should be a description of the church. People should be able to personally look at us and say, yeah, that's the man. That's the person. I know somebody like that. In fact, I know a whole bunch of somebodies like that. That's what Jesus is working toward.